So good morning. This session already is on its way, and it's wonderful to see already so early in the session this quality of attention, this quality of absorption, of quiet. So thank you. I appreciate it when a session starts so strongly. Perhaps it's our Shuso and his words last night. When I selected the study for the Ango, I was looking at various. I knew I wanted to do some poetry. I thought it would be good for us all to study the wonderful quality, immediate quality of poetry. And I looked at several books, and when I opened the book that we're using, I saw this poem. And this poem spoke to me about Sesshin retreat practice together, and my greatest wish for everyone. So I'll read the verse. It's by Chao Zhan. So he was a Tang Dynasty. We don't know a lot about him. We only have a handful of his poems. I know what happened. He quit writing poetry after he got to a certain point in his practice. But this is real. The name of it is The Creek Out Front. Spring songs already quieting, the ancient source still bubbles forth. It's a mistake, my modern friends, to wound the heart to try to cross that stream. So the title again is The Creek Out Front. Spring songs already quieting, the ancient source still bubbles forth. It's a mistake, my modern friends, to wound the heart to try to cross that stream. So my question for you is, what would it be like to simply be present to the creek out front? The stream that is in front of each of us all the time. Not what we have in our mind about our lives, about our practice, about enlightenment, not our fantasies, but the actual stream of life that we are. That's the creek out front. It isn't some idea that we're going to get better and be enlightened and do good in some future point. And Chao Zhan says, the ancient source still bubbles forth. That ancient root, that insight that came from the plains of India and somehow found itself to Cornwall on Hudson, 2009. 2,500 years ago, there were many wise people all over the world, actually, it wasn't just in the East, where a shift in consciousness occurred, and an awareness that it's not out there that we need to look, but rather in here. The sounds and colors and tastes and smells of this session is our practice for this week. The ancient source is always there. It's when we're swaying on the subway in Manhattan. When we're standing in line at the deli, the ancient source is bubbling forth. And that's why Chao Jan says it is a mistake to wound the heart to try to cross that stream. Why struggle when all we need to do is stop? Stop and see. Pay attention. Stop and see. It's always right here in our breath. In each mind moment, we have what we need. But, you know, it gets so complicated. I am the first witness of that. It gets so complicated. The mind creates ideas, and we start following some pattern. Either we're aware of it or we're not aware of it. We're either impulsive. It doesn't matter. We're still caught in this dream. The way to reveal the truth that is always right here, the way we have found in our tradition, is so simple. Take the dignified position of Shakyamuni Buddha. Whether in a chair, on a bench, kneeling, cross-legged, we find a position that reminds us of Shakyamuni Buddha's insight. And we stop. First, we stop the body from twitching and moving and running away. All the physical ways we find to run away from this moment, from this creek, this stream of our life. And when we're sitting in this position, we can't be grasping for something outside of us. That's what wounds the heart. And how many of us have wounded our hearts, have ended a session saying, I failed, I didn't achieve Mr. D's enlightenment experience I read about in Three Pillars of Zen. As long as we are bound by our ideas of what we're going to achieve, we have imprisoned ourselves with our ideas. And it's so easy to fall prey to our old karmic patterns. Reactivity, resistance, dulling our minds, telling ourselves stories. So I'm suggesting that for this session, those of you who have a goal, try dropping the goal and practicing Zazen for the sake of Zazen. What would that be like? Not reaching out, not grasping for one more thing, but reaching in, practicing Zazen for the sake of Zazen, just to do it. I think we've all done that at home occasionally, you know, just for the hell of it, I'll sit a period of Zazen without trying to attain anything. In one of our dedications, one of the services we do every day, we've inherited it from the Soto Zen school, and I've not changed it, but it always grates on me, always bothers me. May we ascend to the throne of enlightenment. I keep saying, I'm going to change that. May we descend into the belly of enlightenment. Big gift. Just sit zazen for the sake of zazen. Allow yourself to trust your zazen, to trust the Buddha Dharma. Trust your original intention, your vow. Trust the ancient source that still bubbles forth, the stream that brought you here, that is you now. I think wisdom is just seeing things as they are. Without our learned opinions and views. And I think mostly most people live in a dream, thinking that who they are is who they've been told they are, some idea they've created in their mind, some arising out of some comparison. Stories that we weave about our relationships. All the stories that we learn from mother, father, brother, sister, school. Some of us relive high school for the rest of our lives, right? Or some traumatic event in junior high over and over and over again. The names and faces change, but the arrows, the wounds still go in the same direction. How to release that? How to stop that? There's a story in the old sutras, Nikaya sutras, about one day the Buddha was sitting in the woods with a group, about 30 of his followers, of his monks, and they had just enjoyed an excellent lunch, and were sitting there in the woods watching the butterflies and the bees. And a farmer came by, and the farmer was in a rage. He was very unhappy. He was walking, kicking the ground as he walked along. And he said to the Buddha, "Have you seen my cows? Have you seen any cows around here?" And the Buddha said, "No, we haven't seen any cows passing by here." And the farmer said, "Monks, I'm so unhappy. I have 12 cows, and I don't know why they all ran away. Not only that, my sesame seed plantation has been completely eaten up by insects. I suffer so much, I just feel like killing myself." The Buddha said, "Friend, we haven't seen any cows passing by here. Maybe you should go look in the other direction." And the farmer left. And the Buddha turned to his monks and he said, "My dear friends, you are the happiest people in the world. You don't have any cows to lose. If you have too many cows to take care of, you will be very, very busy. That is why, in order to be happy, you have to learn the art of cow releasing. You release the cows one by one. In the beginning, you thought those cows were essential to your happiness. And you tried to get more and more and more cows. But now you realize that cows are not really conditions for your happiness. They constitute an obstacle for your happiness. That is why we'll all be determined to release our cows. Let me consider now myself what cow I'd like to release during this session. And I wonder what cow you'd like to release during this session. What is it that we're grasping after? What is it that we're holding on to that we can release? What is it that we think we want that's actually causing us so much pain and suffering? So again, I ask you, what are you doing here? Are you here to improve your life, your health, your idea of your well-being? Or are you here for something deeper? At the heart of it, I think all of us are here to wake up. Not to support one another's grasping and striving. The reverse of that. Sometimes from the outside, a Zen Sesshin can look a little harsh. But that's intentional. We're trying to do that. We're trying to help each other release our cows. And so it's our responsibility, every single person's responsibility in this Sesshin, to be discerning about how we use our relations with others. Even in silence, it's possible to poison the atmosphere. Too much commiserating. You know, mawkish, sentimental consoling of others does more harm than good. It reinforces the one as the victim and the other as the savior. Might feel good for a few moments. Yes, I'll take care of you. It doesn't help the person, and it doesn't help you. When one of us is suffering, when one of us is crying, and there's not a single person who hasn't wept on the cushion, and if you have it, you will. Keep sitting. When someone is going through a process, can't we honor that without turning them into the underdog? Allow them to find their own way, to enter their own stream, to find their own power. Don't take the role of mother, father, savior. Allow the person to allow his or her practice to teach them so that they can find the way. And when we have the impulse, it's really important that each of us recognize what that impulse is, where it's coming from. How easy it is to make someone less in order to make yourself feel like more. In a Zen center that's working, the more senior the student, the less important they look. The quieter and less prominent they appear. The best teaching is the teaching that is done through activity, not through words. The work that's done when no one's around. The gift that's given that's never seen. It's what so many lovers want. Don't tell me you love me. Love me. And I hope that goes all the way to the top of our little anthill of a hierarchy here. I do try very hard not to aggrandize the role of teacher, while still holding the inherent responsibility for the community and following the forms that I inherited from my teacher, somewhat. I see your suffering, and it makes me sad. And I trust that you will find your way. I watch you with love and compassion. But the business of Zen is not consolation. It's not to hold you down in some victim space. The business of Zen is to help you to wake up. And if that means that I watch you suffer, then I'm going to watch you suffer. Because it's about liberation. I trust, because of my own experience and that of my senior students, that if you follow this practice, if you honestly and fiercely do Zazen, you will realize the ultimate value of your life. You will enter the Buddha Dharma. And you will release and let go of all those old cows. You will see the true value of practice. Hanshan, we read this in the study week last week, Hanshan's poem I want to share with you. East of me, the old lady got rich 3 or 4 years ago, used to be poorer than me. Now she laughs that I don't have money. She laughs that I've fallen behind. I laugh that she's gotten ahead. Both of us laughing. No stopping us, east and west. So that woman over there, that old woman over there, she got rich 3 or 4 years ago. Got an endowment, $2 million. Used to be poorer than me. Now she laughs that I don't have money. She laughs that I've fallen behind. I laugh that she's gotten ahead. Both of us laughing. No stopping us. East and west. Can you imagine the freedom to be able to laugh at your good fortune, to be able to laugh at your poor fortune, your ill fortune, misfortune? In my experience of the people that come and practice with us, it is comparing mind that is the most insidious and pain-inducing practice. This idea of comparing yourself to others or to ideas, ideals that you might have. It is the cause of pain and suffering. It is the cause of wars. Comparing, not like Hanshan and the old lady, knowing how to be satisfied is one of the awarenesses of the Buddha. Every aspect of your life, knowing how to be satisfied in each moment, just as you are. An agitated crow, a fat, lazy groundhog, an obsessive ant. Great differences in the world. Does the ant look at the cicada and whine? There's a great teaching outside these windows, outside these doors. It's incredible diversity. Plant and animal, insect, bird life. And then if we reflect on our comparing mind and how we want to come up to some mark that we've drawn on the wall, and how poor and unfertile that idea is. If you can let go of the cow of comparing, you can rest in the vitality of the creek out front, the stream that you are right now. Who knows what you'll be next year, but right now. How do we find a way to express our incomparable, our not comparable, our uniqueness? Stop the chatter. Listen to the rhythms of your original self. Li Po wrote about doing zazen on Qingting Mountain. The birds have vanished from the sky. Now the last cloud drains away. We sit together, the mountain and me, until only the mountain remains. Dropping off body and mind. Dropping off striving, grasping. A herd of cows. Dropping off me versus you, my way versus your way, and instead only the mountain remains, only the body of reality. In the cicada storms we hear, in the green of this summer, the blue of the sky. Who is this that you must trust? Where can this trust be? I'll close with a poem by Juan Ramon Jimenez so that you don't think that it's all some exotic Asian thing. He gave us the same wisdom that I've been trying to convey to you today. I am not I. I am this one, walking beside me, whom I do not see, whom at times I manage to visit, and whom at other times I forget, who remains calm and silent while I talk, and forgives gently when I hate, who walks where I am not, who will remain standing when I die.